Good morning, everyone. We will be starting today's session. And today's session will focus on Sustainable Development Goal 3, SDG 3, that is. I would like to welcome everyone in this room, and I would like to welcome all of the members of Parliament. And on behalf of the Vice President, Georges Jalacan, I would also like to tell you that it is a great honor and pleasure to be the moderator of this panel. This panel is made up of very illustrious guests that I will present right now. And you will see that this session will be a pleasant, enriching, and useful one when talking about social well-being, health, and specifically quality health, which is, after all, the objective of this SDG. We have interpretation. I assume that it is working for the delegates that are listening to the English channel. Moreover, I would also like to wish that today's and yesterday's visits would have been useful considering these two panels. Indeed, we organized a panel yesterday and one today together with the president of the 12-plus geopolitical group. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend yesterday's visit, but I know that they were successful. Now, our president of the 12-plus geopolitical group has also reached us, José Duarte Pacheco, would like to welcome. So, I would like to present the panel of our guests and thank them for being here today. And so, I will start by presenting Professor Adalberto Cambridge Fernandez on my right. He has a PhD in Health Administration from the University of Lisbon. He has a degree in Public Health. He is a professor of the National Health School here in Portugal. As you know, he was a former health minister here in Portugal, and he carried out various roles in the management board of various hospitals here in Portugal. He was also president of the management board of the Hospital of Santa Maria, Porto Valente. So he has also commissioned and published various works in the health administration, and he is also active in various international and national stakeholders groups. I'd like to present our second speaker, Professor Francisco Jorge, who was born in Lisbon and has a degree in medicine obtained from the University of Lisbon. He also attended the national health curricula here in Lisbon, meaning that he has taken over various roles in the WHO across various countries around the globe. So in Shanghai and Africa, so he has visited many countries in his role. And currently, as you all know, the Francisco Jorge is also the president of the Red Cross here in Portugal. He also represented Portugal in the European framework, talking about matters related to HIV and health. And therefore, once again, he has received various distinctions and honors. But these honors, of course, were national, not international. And then, last but not least, we have the parliamentarian, the representative of the Swedish UIP delegation. I would like to thank her for being here today, for being with us. She was also the president and chairperson of various committees when working on taxes and social security, agriculture, environment, and animal well-being. And so we would like to count on her vision and her experience and how they can flow into the health issue. Moreover, we're also having a guest joining us via video conference. We will have the speaker, who I'd like to welcome right now, Emilia Aragon. She is in the regional cabinet of the WHO for Europe, in the cabinet assessing health and development, and she will be speaking from her office in the WHO facility. And she is here to replace Miss Bettina Marie Men, but unfortunately she's not available. But luckily enough, we have Miss Emilia Aragon with us today, who is gracing us with her presence, and she will give us more of an insight into health challenges when it comes to social and economic indicators related to health. So, after this brief round of presentations of the panel, I would like to kick off this session. And I would like to do so by highlighting the importance of this debate, especially when considering health matters. In Portugal, we've had countless debates on this precise topic. And what is interesting is that we all value our national health system here in Portugal. And as the President of the Portuguese Parliament mentioned yesterday, the national health system here in Portugal is incredibly important for all of the Portuguese citizens, and it's something that we need to keep on maintaining and cultivating and nurturing to ensure that citizens can access our health system. And this access would allow them to meet all of their demands, and the health system has to be active across all of the territory. Healthcare, well, healthcare, of course, includes primary healthcare, but healthcare also means prevention, well-being. Basically, it all flows into guaranteeing a good quality of life. Good quality of life, which prevents health risks. So, yes, we can also speak of preventive medicine, which focuses on the well-being, the overall well-being of a citizen, which basically leaves nobody behind when meeting the demands of our citizens. Therefore, healthcare is fundamental. Now, having said this, I would like to pass the floor to Professor Adalberto Campos Fernandes. Professor, the floor is yours. Thank you very much, Ms. Hortense Martins. First of all, I would like to greet the president of the 12 Plus Geopolitical Group and the vice president of the Portuguese Parliament. I would also like to welcome and greet all of the participants. And thank you very much for having invited me here today to participate in this debate and give you an insight into our national perspective, as well as our international collaboration when it comes to meeting the objectives of SDG 3. Now, these objectives were defined in 2015, and they are a definition which were defined by the UN. But it's also a siren call to ensure that we can break the cycle of poverty, protect the environment and planet, and guarantee prosperity and peace across the world. The last two decades were underscored by a marked increase of the quality of life in all of its iterations. They had a very positive impact on human development. We have seen a transversal change when it comes to health and the distribution of diseases. In the last 40 years, the world has changed, societies have become more complex, and at the same time, the health demands and needs have become more difficult to meet, and financing and funding has also become a more complex system. Acute disease was replaced in specific countries, especially in the most developed countries, by the burden of chronic diseases and non-communicable diseases. The success experienced by the world is mostly due thanks to development, research, and the deep knowledge from a scientific point of view, as well as an economic point of view. And all this flows into the social security system. Demographics is one of the most disturbing prospects we have when it comes to the future. As an example, allow me to share the following. In Portugal, since the beginning of the 1990s, we have seen a rise of 35% of population who are older than 65 years of age. At the same time, we have seen a slump, which is higher than 20%, of children and teenagers who are not 25 years old. In 2060, if nothing is made, the current population in our country, which is 10 million, will go down to around 8 million with an aging rate which will go up to 37%. That means 12 elderly for one young person. That means that the health system has to assess aging and the epidemiological status as one of its big challenges to ensure that it can meet the SDG-3. In a framework which has to be invested in, ethical decision-making and policy-making has to be invested in a shift of focus on our technology, and patient and person-centric policies have to be made. We have to assess the different levels of healthcare without forgetting that research and innovation is a decisive factor when it comes to the reduction of cost, which is also very important. Moreover, we are facing a huge shift of what knowledge is and of what human capital is. As I said briefly ago, when it comes to costs and sharing costs, is becoming a real challenge, and therefore we have to define specific priorities. Governments have to take on their role of regulation of social security and promoting human dignity to give a solution, which is a huge problem in the world. How can we finance public health policies in the future in a sustainable and long-lasting way by also ensuring the differentiation of the healthcare system and by providing cutting-edge technologies as well as qualified personnel? When considering the Millennium Development Goals and the Sustainable Development Goals, what we should consider is the following. The importance of health policies for everyone there and the impact it will have on future generations. I'm trying to keep to the time, but I know that I am going a bit too fast for some of the translations. So I'm trying to stick to my allotted time, so I'm rushing a bit, but I'll try to slow down. Minister, you forgot about your timekeeper, but I'll be your timekeeper. Ah, thank you. We know that more than 60 million children die every year in the world before reaching the age of 5. We also know that the burden of specific diseases which can be avoided, such as TB, have not diminished, but we have seen an insurgence of new countries. Day in, day out, 100,000 of women die because of childbirth or due to complications during their pregnancy and their childbirth. HIV and AIDS represents the main cause of death in the sub-Saharan Africa. It has become a scourge in Africa. I would like to conclude by saying the following. SDGs are a siren call and they want us to wake up. Everyone has to wake up, governments, NGOs, institutions, to ensure that we can reach, as soon as possible, universal coverage. We want to reach a just and modern society, and a just and modern society has to give equal access to healthcare to its citizens. It is not acceptable, from a moral, ethical, and political point of view, limitations of any kind when it comes to the access of adequate, high-quality, opportune, and timely health care which meets the needs of our citizens. The WHO said think globally, act locally, is growing from strength to strength. It promotes our need for better health and the access to health to ensure that every single citizen can be at the heart of the preoccupations, the policies and systems of our governments to overcome inequalities. We will have to create global systems where universality, facilitated access and free healthcare are an imperative at the heart of our decisions. Finally, in the health policies, I introduced the main idea that health investment has a direct return, but it also has a social return on investment, which is priceless. And so we also have to consider this factor when planning our budgets in the different countries. That means that we shouldn't just focus on the growing costs and the risks associated to the healthcare system, but we have to think about the investment as an investment in humanity and citizens. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much, Mr. Alberto Campos Fernandes, our former health minister, who just talked to us about the connection between human rights, health, and our preoccupation when it comes to universal coverage by giving access to citizens in a timely and opportune manner against the backdrop of these tensions that arise sometimes when assessing and drafting states' governments. Thank you very much, Mr. Adalberto Campos. And I would like to pass the floor to Mr. Francisco Jorge, who is the president of the Portuguese Red Cross, and he will be talking to us about his experience as a director and about the burdens and challenges to accessing the health system and how to ensure that marginalized populations are not left behind when it comes to accessing healthcare. And I'm sure he will give us some insight which falls back on his international travels and his Portuguese experience. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Hortense Martins. It's a real pleasure to be here today. I would like to greet as well the Vice President of the Portuguese Parliament, Jorge Leal, and Duarte Pacheco. What I can tell you is that I am incredibly interested to participate in this debate with all the participants within our group. I will focus on some notes, and these notes, at a later stage, will allow us to debate about the topics in a more detailed manner. But unfortunately, time is short, so we will not be able to develop all of these topics in their totality. So I'm just going to leave some notes and comments which represent food for thought. My friend and colleague Adalberto Campos Fernandes has already described the importance and the fundamental significance of social issues within the health system. And so these social indicators are important within the public health sector. Of course, it's important, but we have to go into detail. He said that poverty is the most important component and the most important risk factor vis-a-vis health, but throughout our whole life cycle. And that is why an access to health also flows into this. This is why we can say that health, the population's health, and prosperity, so we're talking of welfare and social well-being, are democratic matters and issues. I'm going to highlight this right now. A population's health in this day and age is a democratic problem. And governments have the responsibility of reducing the social burden. Recently, Michael Marmot, an Englishman, demonstrated by using a prospective longitudinal study based on two samples, one sample based on a low-income, or rather a poor population, and another one whose household income had a very advantageous and high ranking. By comparing these two samples, he saw that over the course of the years, the first symptoms of Alzheimer's can be seen at 15 years earlier in the group focusing on the poor group. So that's 15 years. That represents a huge social gap, which has to worry us, which has to really scare the representatives of the populations. We're talking of members of parliament and governments. Because, in democratic terms, we simply cannot accept the fact that the start, the insurgence of the first Alzheimer symptoms come to the fore 15 years earlier when compared to richer populations. What I would go on to say, without taking up too much time, because during these debates, it's always good to give you some food for thought and then let the debate flow in smaller groups. Therefore, as I was saying, in the following years, what we will have to do when it comes to sustainability. And sustainability, in this case, is interpreted in the following way. We have to take and implement measures right now to guarantee sustainability. But these measures, which will be implemented today, cannot represent an issue for future generations. So we have to implement measures to protect our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren in the following 20, 40 years. And these measures have to be implemented, have to be taken now. And we have four main groups that we have to assess. First, chronic diseases. Chronic non-communicable diseases, such as cancer, cardiovascular diseases, and diabetes, require immediate measures. I'm talking of diabetes type 2, of course. And so they require immediate measures and strategies because they are at the heart of an upward curve which cannot be controlled, and so they need immediate intervention. When it comes to diabetes and the ways of tackling diabetes and treating this, what it needs is for us to break it down, to slow it down somehow. And to slow it down, states, as well as members of parliament, the European Union and its bodies, namely the parliament, need to implement measures when it comes to the commercial indicators that are at the heart or at the origin of this phenomena that we are experiencing on our skin in this day and age. Especially when speaking about diabetes and the regulation of sugar as the main food source in our populations. Now, this is a topic which all members of parliament should rethink about. They should be introspective and they should decide what to do. I participated in European Parliament meetings where internal debates don't allow us to decide on the need to reduce the level and the amount of sugar in foodstuff. This is one problem. Moving on to the second problem. Now, antibiotic resistance, that is another huge problem. We have to implement specific measures, and I'm talking of normative and legislative measures, when it comes to antibiotics for the protection against bacteria, against antivirals, and autogenic particles, as well as antiparasitic what we have to do when it comes to anti-malarial issues, we are building resistance, and so we have to do something to implement specific measures. I do not want to shock anyone, but allow me to say the following. Politicians really need to understand that there are specific public health matters, and they're the only ones that can solve them with legislative measures. If they do not do so, today's children and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will accuse today's generation of politicians of not having implemented any type of specific measures. Another third group of problems is the following. The effects of public health sector and the climate change. Now we have melanoma and skin cancer. We have also specific regions which have been completely transformed. They have become subtropical due to the global warming, and that means that we will be faced in the future with specific diseases relating to vectorial transmissions, so vector-borne diseases, such as dengue, Zika, yellow fever, among many others. And the last group of problems we will have to face. Now, of course, this has no relevance on a type of hierarchy, but this is one of the four great problems. We have to reduce the social gap. If it is true that if I am born in Portugal and I am born into wealth, or if I am born as part of a working class family, or I'm born as part of a Portuguese family, a religious family, or a gypsy, I will be able to access national healthcare, regardless of what I am born into. And that is why Portugal has been successful when it comes to health indicators. But if it's true that inequality is not a problem in this specific matter here in Portugal, the same does not happen in the following that I want to highlight. When it comes to the life cycle, there are specific problems that create inequality. Without adhering to the principle of equality for everyone. As I've said right from the start, these matters are related to democracy, and so we have to solve them as quickly as possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much, Mr. Francisco Jorge. You have given us plenty of food for thought, and you have launched some challenges, as we are, of course, parliamentarians and politicians who work in this matter. And you talked about the importance of the population's health, as it is a democratic matter. And I believe that all members of parliament are in agreement with what you have just said. I also believe that when you spoke of that example, i.e. the insurgence of the first Alzheimer's symptoms appearing 15 years before in low-income families compared to high-income families, well, that represents a challenge for us as citizens, yes, but also as legislators of a specific system, a system which aims to invest more and interact more in general well-being and preventive medicine for our population and citizens. So thank you very much, Mr. Francisco Giorgio. Now I'd like to pass the floor to a Member of Parliament, Cecilia Witt Green, a member of the Swedish Parliament, and she's a president of the Swedish delegation of the IPU. She will share with us her experience from her countries when it comes to the links between health and the environment and the implementation of SDGs and the impact on the health and health system. And specifically, she will also talk to us about the more marginalized and vulnerable populations. And therefore, Ms. Cecilia White-Green, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Chair, and thank you very much, the hosts of Portugal, for these interesting days. And let me just mention the special relationship between Portugal and Sweden. We were one of the first countries acknowledging Portugal in the year of 1641, and have since then have bilateral relations, and we hope they will keep on much longer, of course, but they have already been there for over 300 years. It's very nice to be in this distinguished panel, and thank you very much. I will try to give a concrete example from the north part of Europe, of Sweden, what we have done and where we are going. Good health, social being, and welfare are, of course, the most important factors for a peaceful world, for increased security, for safety, for better relations and cooperation. When people feel better, they actually make better decisions. They act more rationally, and they have strength to take responsibility. Therefore, it is one of the most important goals, as I see it, and I have had the privilege of being an elected member of parliament for 2 decades and working with healthcare as one of those policy issues. But for the future, we need to even work more together. Sweden has carried out a long term of efforts, both historically and for the future. We have tried to improve our public health. This manifests itself, for example, here when the United Nations measure the sustainable development goals, the indicators, and compared with other countries, as you can see, we are ranked top number one of those OECD countries in the world. However, it's a very, very high ranking. But we don't take that top ranking for granted. No, we try to work as hard as we can to keep it up and even be much better than we were yesterday. Good health and well-being is, of course, one of the most widely discussed national issues, too. And we try, therefore, to have as good debate as possible. As elected representatives, it's one of the most discussed issues. But also among the voters, among the population, it's a very, very discussed issue. So we try to keep that up. And I think one of those things is that when democracy is flowing so much and we discuss it so much, we actually involve the people. And therefore also the discussion of healthcare will be better in the future when we have these good discussions. Ja, nu kom det mycket på en gång. Well, there we are. Nearly back home. Encouraging healthy lifestyles and promoting that is, of course, very essential. Investing in healthcare is the most efficient reinvesting in the future and developing the whole society. Research and development and, of course, the innovative capacities strengthen the entrepreneurship spirits and create opportunities for the future with its people. Yesterday we learned about what Portugal does for cancer, not only in Portugal, but actually all around the world. We need to have more of those efforts all around, and we try to do our best in Sweden. As you know, we recognize the super excellence every year with the Nobel Prizes that we give away in December each year, that we actually try to acknowledge the best Medicare examples of the world. And that's one of another example of having all those great excellence being shared with others to being able to be in the future policy making of tomorrow. The best possible health, food, water, clean air and sanitation, hygiene and medicines are, of course, fundamental rights for the future. How do we do it? Well, of course, we have a national strategy. We have a national action plan. But what we also do, compared and together with the national level, is that we both on regional and local levels, which are very strong actors in Sweden, have the welfare all combined on all three levels. And the funding and the implementation together, all these three levels, are of course the essential key on why we have had success during all these years. The second thing we do is that we measure. We measure everything. We put on goals and we measure. And then we measure again and we share those values, we share those experiences, we do those comparisons, and we have national registers on everything. And we have had so for decades. And that's why when we put up a new clear goal, we can even go further, because we know where we come from and we know where we're getting. Those are relevant goals. Those are realistic goals. Those are clear goals. And as many people are getting as involved in those as possible. I'd like to just give you one example, and that is the Swedish National Cancer Strategy. We have, that is, as you know, in the Western world, one of those huge diseases that we will work for decades now. One out of three of us will be affected. That's how it looks right now. We have to change that. Far too many people lose their lives. But with technology, with innovation, with research, with biomedicine, with artificial intelligence, of course we can do much better. And right now there are so many more people living with a cured cancer than ever before. One of those successful things we have seen is that we have measured and put out goals on every level, local level, regional level, and national level, and they are all combined, how we work that all together. So strategies has to be combined with action plans, but has to put up with a lot of clear and realistic goals, and then we have to follow them. We involve as many people of society as possible. As policymakers, we cannot just stay on the local level, the regional level, on the national level. We involve the civil society. We involve the local society. We involve the NGOs. We involve the business sector, the trade unions and academic, the education sector. We try to be as broad as possible. And as it is a highly debated discussion in Sweden, of course, we try to get involved and so much closer to the people as possibly can. So in Sweden, we could ask the question, who does not have an action plan for the SDGs of health? Of course, it's a part of investing in the future. The global trend is that people live longer. Lovely. But in many cases, we do not have support system for vulnerable, for elderly, for mental health. And of course, we are living now in a greater risk of having those various threats coming to the human health. We need to broaden our view on health and well-being, and not only on diagnosis or causes. We have to have a discussion about subjective measurements of health, such as self-estimates of health, number of healthy years of lives, of well-being, in order to achieve an even more relevant connection between the current debate on health and what is well-being in the future. Those preventive measures of unhealthiness is the key to the success for even getting much closer to getting an even more healthy society. So as I say, we don't lean back, we try to improve even more. We don't sit back and we do not wait for the solutions to come or to stay high-ranked in this United Nations high-rank. No, we see things that has to be solved. One of those is example. There are conflicts in those goals that we see, and we try to identify them, but we have to address them even more. The policy-making needs to be more resulted-oriented, and we have to be more based on quality. That is why we need to take decisions that are actually necessary. Don't take decisions that are not necessary, and don't measure what you don't have to measure. So Sweden can also make a much better job a lot remains have to be done. We have a homework to do. We try to improve our way of analysis, our way of knowledge development, and our way of evaluation, conduct in even order to be better to implement and to be even more successful. And for that, we need even broader leadership, leadership mainly between local, regional, and national levels. Because I'm sure we have heard of successful projects, and unfortunately, they just stop with projects. That's where they stop. And those implementations requires more leadership, more accountability, and of course, more funding. And I agree with my co-partner here at the panel, that antibiotic resistance is not yet a global indicator, but has to be a global indicator. And it's not mentioned against with the goals or in the immediate goals. That is not good enough. We need to be even better on that. We try to do it nationally, but we need to be more on both the European level, but actually on the global level. Measure and the counteract of antibiotic resistance is an important aspect of how we protect against threats in the future. And that is, of course, very, very, very essential. Day-to-day business for everyone. Of course, we can contribute even more in our daily lives as legislators, as decision makers, as fellow being human being. One of those things is to acknowledge mental illness. You know, in your surroundings, there are people that not feel well. Well, do something about it. Don't just let it stay while sitting there. You can actually do more. Take care of yourself and those people around you. You know what is unhealthy, and you know what you should, you know, stop not using. I will give you now an example, and it may shock you, but in Sweden we have now implemented a ban on smoking, on tobacco. It is not now, okay to smoke in places, in restaurants, in parliament, in hospitals, or outside on the train station, on the bus station. We have a ban on tobacco now. It was a long debate. Very long debate. The tobacco companies are, of course, very mad at the Swedish policymakers right now. But health won, and our kids and the grandkids won, because we just decided this is how we're going to do it. It's ban on tobacco. But they are creative tobacco companies, and they have now promoted new products that looks like cigarettes, that looks like chewing tobacco, but they have not tobacco and they have not nicotine in themselves. So you can actually do a difference. So welcome to Sweden, the non-smoking country. Another concrete example I would give you is that we have now focused on the multi-mobile healthcare teams. We have a lot of institutions of healthcare in Sweden, the local level, the hospitals, and of course the universal hospitals. What we have seen, though, is that the excess is so bad that the people that really need the benefits out of these institutions won't reach the institutions. So we have, like the flying doctors in Australia, we have put the doctors and the nurses in cars now. They go out to the patients. They go out to the chronicles. They go out to the kids that have chronic diseases or the people that have cancer that do not need to come to an institution. We drive out. Of course, you have to talk to the doctors a lot, the nurses a lot. They do not want to leave institutions. But what is best for the healthcare? We have now realized that we have opened up so much space in our, of course, emergency place that the people that actually come there, they get the help that they need. They do not wait in lines because we have reduced this so much. Among elderly people in the region where I live, we have reduced emergency trips with 85% for those elderly people that cannot stay at home, have a visit without seeing nurse and getting the same care as they would have done if they would have entered the institution. So that's for the future. It's a wake-up call. We can do more, and even the ones that do well today can do even better, but we have to work much more together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Cecilia. It's a good strategy. Vou voltar ao português. Realmente, apresentou-nos aqui a visão de...
It's a really good strategy. You are giving us a vision when it comes to health being an investment for the future. And it's something that we all share here as part of the panel. It is a clearly focused strategy and clearly explained strategy with objectives which are realistic. And this is incredibly important, of course. You also talked about measures that reflect those strategies and policies which have to be result-focused, which also have to consider the following. You can't just draft policies. You can't just be sat down in a parliament and make policies and that's it. No, you have to go the extra mile. You have to involve communities, healthcare professionals and experts, because that is the only way that we will ensure that policies translate into practice. And after all, the challenges that we face, both from an economic point of view and the people working in the economic world, when assessing these measures, they then just turn into challenges, challenges that ensure that we have to change the whole economy. So it's really a very complex matter. And so we have to ensure that priorities and citizens' well-being go hand in hand with our priorities. So it has to be very people-centric. So thank you very much for sharing your vision with us. The president of the IPU has also reached us, Ms. Gabriela Cuevas Barón. I would like to welcome her here today to our second panel. And so, without further ado, I would like to kick off the next intervention thanks to our video conference system. And I would like to welcome Ms. Emilia Aragon. I would also like to thank her for being with us here today. And for also having participated to the interventions of the panel, having listened to us. And she will be speaking from the regional office of the WHO here in Europe, Health and Development. And so once again, I would like to pass the floor to our next speaker. So the floor is yours.
Hello, good morning. Just checking if everybody can hear me.
Please.
Great.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time as well and for this kind invitation. We're very excited to contribute from far away. My name is Emilia Aragon. I work for the regional office for the WHO Regional Office for Europe in the Sustainable Development and Health Program. I've heard a lot of the different contributions from the other panel members, and I think everything is much in line with what I've prepared. So I'll try to just highlight those differences and other situations that I noticed. So how far are we from achieving the health-related SDGs in the European region? And as Hans Rosling would say, the world might not be as bad as we might believe because there's signs of progress. Life expectancy has increased, as mentioned already. But one of the things that we really need to carefully look at, it's also at the gaps and differences between countries. And this is an example of a 10-year difference in countries of the European region. But we can also see differences, as mentioned by one of the panelists, in groups of different socioeconomical backgrounds. In different communities, depending on their exposures. Also, we need to prepare for the population aging and the trend. It is expected that, forecasted that for 2050, we will account for around 35% of older people of the whole of the population of Europe. There's other good news. Some SDG targets have been reached. And sorry about that. So let me just go back to the news. the region has already decreased maternal deaths. We've seen significant reduction in under five mortality rates. And of course, most of the region has been kept malaria free and polio free throughout the years. Many of these challenges, of these achievements are challenged by different factors. So for example, we can see that in maternal mortality rate, progress has been uneven. And what you can see in this graph, the blue line representing the WHO European region average. The yellow line represents the minimum reported, but the green line represents the maximum, which is still below the target of 70 proposed by the United Nations. But this hides that for every woman who dies of pregnancy-related causes, 20 to 30 women experience acute or chronic morbidity, influencing their further life course and affecting the development of their family and then of the societies. Any avoidable maternal mortality or morbidity is unacceptable. The same for children mortality or morbidity that is avoidable. Therefore, as said by our Swedish colleague, we cannot sit back even when we have achieved some of the goals. And some of the SDG targets will only be achieved if we significantly scale up action. For example, NCDs, which is the major, accounting for the major burden of disease, estimated at 86% of deaths and 77% of disease burden in the region, we need to scale up action. As you can see also in this picture, there's gaps between high-income countries in the right and lower middle-income countries. And most of the progress that we've seen comes from action in high-income countries, which goes into improving the living conditions, access to food, access to mobility systems. And another gap that we see is between sexes, where there's a difference between males and female mortality. We have even observed high pockets of avoidable mortality among men under 70 in some countries of the region. So efforts need to be made to achieve the 9 voluntary NCD targets, which are around tobacco, the use of tobacco, consumption of alcohol, salt, sugar, physical activity, reduction of overweight and obesity. In the European region, there's still tobacco products are still far too affordable in many member states. And we need to change our food systems, our mobility systems, in order to reduce the prevalence of overweight and obesity, which has been actually steadily increased instead of reducing. Prevalence of mental health disorders is also projected to increase, not only because right now being around 16%, and this is not only because of the aging of the populations, but also due to increased exposure to adverse risks such as conflict, migration, and as we know, also the different ways of working and occupational risks. The prevalence, despite many improvements, we also see that we're not on track for meeting the HIV targets, as shown in this graph. The red line represents the trend that we must be having if we are to achieve the 2030 target of eliminating no new cases of HIV. In the region, actually, we're seeing that nearly 160,000 people were newly diagnosed with HIV in 2017. And projections show that the trend is rising, with the transmission mode being actually by heterosexual transmission. And we cannot forget about immunization. In the first 2 months of 2019, 34,300 measles cases have been reported in 42 countries of the region. The persistence of pockets of non-immunized children or under-immunized individuals in many countries is fueling the continuing spread of measles. And this is not about having vaccines available, but this is about the acceptance of the population to the intervention that we know works. And beyond SDG 3 targets, we need to remember that there's other goals determining the health and well-being of the populations. So just in short, I'm going to speak about the more than 550,000 deaths in 2016 attributable to household and ambient air pollution in the region. Unsustainable consumption and production impact on the health. There's through environmental degradation and the growing social inequities. Food, housing and transport have been identified as the hotspots of unsustainable lifestyle where we need to make changes and make sure that we enable people to have sustainable lifestyles and access the food and the services that they need. Consumption just in the EU has increased sixfold since 1960. We need to address unsustainable consumption and production, and not just for the impact on air pollution, but also, as mentioned by the other panelists, the growing threat of antimicrobial resistance, which we can see circulating among humans, animals, and the environment. And we also have it kills around 25,000 people out of 400,000 every year in the region. The other potential health impacts of climate change and its increasing variability is wide-ranging. So far, we've seen, for example, that heat waves have been the deadliest extreme weather event in the region, causing more than 100,000 premature deaths. Beyond those changes in patterns of some vector-borne diseases and the increased risk of disasters. Health systems need to be further strengthened. There's still people in the region who are facing financial hardship when trying to access health services. What we see in this graph is there's a variation between 0.3% to 9% of households impoverished or being further pushed into poverty by trying to spend for healthcare. And this is focused mainly on paying for laboratory services, dental services, and as well as medicines. And then in this picture, according to a forecast, we can see what is the future of the burden of disease around 240. And we see an increase in cancers, neurological disorders, chronic respiratory diseases, mental disorders, and diabetes, for which our health systems need to be ready to respond. In the WHO European region, we have adopted in 2016 a roadmap to implement the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. This roadmap has highlighted 9 areas of acceleration that, when prioritized, will produce co-benefits for health and across many of the other goals. I would like to highlight here 2 things. One is the multi-sectoral action that is needed, beyond action just on our health systems, as well mentioned by our colleague from Sweden, the action by other sectors where we need to improve how people live, the well-being of the populations is very important. There's a need also for policy coherence and improving governance and leadership, having the 3 levels of implementation at the national, subnational, and CT community level, and the importance also for monitoring. As shown also in many of the graphs, it is not just about the averages, but it's also about having segregated data to analyze who are these populations that are being left behind, and we need to strengthen our efforts to reach them. We're also working on preparing a guide that will break down the SDG implementation, which we know is complex and comprehensive, and also it depends really on where the country is. We see Sweden in implementing many different policies already and interventions. And we are trying to promote as well the learning from different countries, regions, and communities, and we do this through different networks. And what this network is doing is precisely trying to improve the learning between countries to implement the right policies. So I really like to commend that. This guide, we're actually trying to highlight what is the role of parliamentarians as well when trying to guiding ourselves the functions in lawmaking, oversight, and representation. And we see opportunities in there for parliamentarians when they coordinate efforts for better implementation of the health priorities across government sectors and levels, in working with the institutions that are in charge of overseeing implementation, and working with the bodies, with the people, with international and regional bodies, and also strengthening the enabling environments for SDGs when they identify law reform priorities and drafting SDG-related legislation, financial mechanisms, etc. So we have a lot of work to do, I agree. We cannot sit back. but we also have a lot of collective knowledge on what works. And I really, again, would like to congratulate you for this meeting, and I hope it. I'm able to inspire you as well for more learning, and please get in touch if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Emilia Aragon. Thank you. This is a good intervention, I think, with the data and all things to have a good discussion. Thank you. And now we... agora vou falar em português, já estava a esquecer, porque...
I can switch back to Portuguese now. So, resuming, we'll go back to our session and pass the floor at the end of all of these presentations from our speakers to whoever wants to intervene in this debate. So I would like to ask all of the members of parliament and members here to have an open conversation with our panelists and ask questions or share your own vision and experiences vis-a-vis the topic treated today, i.e. health, social and economic indicators in the health system, and so you can give opinions and examples on how promote new technologies in the health system in a sustainable manner, especially when drafting a national budget. Therefore, I would like to ask you to take the floor. So if any of you would like to do so, you can just raise your hand or your placard, and I will do so. I have many people who have already registered, so I will pass the floor to Franz. And I would like them to introduce themselves. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much for all these presentations. But it seems that there's a subject which was not covered when we're speaking about accessing health, which is a very important problem in France. But I think it's also an issue in Portugal, so as to have exchanged some views with a parliamentary. And the difficulty today is to find a doctor, and to create what we call in France today, but also in other European, that is of these medical deserts with medical premises, that is in terms of metropolitans and aging of the population, and territories which are today have a total absence of doctors. And in view of such, we have quite a lot of difficulty, although the communities have different means to attract these doctors, like quality of life, possibility to settle. But these doctors, for different reasons, prefer to be in a larger metropolis. When we're discussing a Senate, discussing at the Senate the encouragement of having doctors to settle and with different mechanisms, so we have different difficulties. So I would be interested in knowing that this observation is shared by the countries in this room, and namely in Sweden, for us is a model. Sweden is a model in terms of health policies. And in view of such, what are the common possibilities that we can have to encourage this? Because we hear that we have doctors coming from Eastern countries settling in France, but when we discuss with the authorities of these countries, we discuss that the problem is the same, that the difficulty of these doctors settling in our countries is very difficult, and we've elaborated different medical strategies. Now, if we have no longer any doctors in our territory, of course, telemedicine is one thing, but we have a fringe of our population which is very, very far from the technological reality with a difficulty of coverage in our territory. So I think we really face quite a challenge along these lines. Thank you very much for that question. It's also my concern We have that concern as well.
So we have a really important matter, so the challenge of covering the whole territory, an aging population, as well as desertification. There are specific areas in our territory where there is no coverage of healthcare. So I would like to thank France that has identified this issue. But as the Member of Parliament said, it's not only a problem in France, but also a problem in Portugal, as well as other countries have this issue. Indeed, this challenge of specialists and experts wanting to move to big metropolis and hubs to promote their career, well, is a huge challenge for the management and drafting policies. When it comes to citizen proximity, we also know that health access and healthcare is an important element when it comes to employing people in these areas which do not have a good functioning healthcare system. So, having said this, I think that we have enough time to pass the floor to our other members who would like to take the floor. And so I would like to hand the floor to Adalberto Campos Fernandes to reply to this matter. Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to thank the Member of Parliament, because it's not the $1 million question you've asked, but it's that type of question that we've asked in Europe, and it's a very important one. I was part of the government for 3 years, and during these 3 years, day in, day out, I faced the preoccupations of local representatives and mayors when it comes to the difficulty of sending doctors to the more rural regions. But we're not just talking of small communities. No, we're also talking of larger communities. In Portugal, there are some regions, such as the Algarve or the Alentejo, which have quite a big density, but are very rural. I do remember that during some of the meetings in Europe and in the European Parliament, we spoke about medical mobility on the one hand, and on the other hand, about the lack of doctors in Europe in the following 20 years. Indeed, Europe overall, so we're not just talking of the European Union, but all of Europe, will be facing a serious lack of medical resources. And by that I mean doctors, because the democratization of health access is being spread to other countries, which in the past had greater difficulty. So we're talking of the former Soviet bloc, because they are independent ones, and they are developing policies when it comes to increasing access to healthcare. And so we are speaking of a European problem. We know that in Poland, they train and then they go to Germany or France, and that there is a huge tendency in Europe, especially in smaller and medium countries, of moving to these larger countries. And then when they reach these larger countries, they go to the main cities. And so we have to approach this matter in the two different aspects. It's difficult to overcome this trend because there's a lot of attraction in these hubs. We have got university hospitals, research centers. Yesterday, you all visited the Champagnol Foundation. This foundation is an example of a magnet which attracts younger professionals to work in these foundations. And so it's a bit difficult to overcome this challenge. But to conclude, what I would like to say that this matter does not only rely on health policies, but also on urban policies. We speak of a Europe of regions. We speak a lot about the necessity of increasing the scope of the regions and in creating new centres. Let's take the border regions in Portugal and Spain. Portugal and Spain have got similar problems, so they have to create hubs, centers in these border regions to overcome the problems. We have to promote economic development. We have to create specific factors which guarantee that younger families live in the rural areas of the countries. And what we have to do, we have to invest a lot in decentralization. Regional decentralization is the best way of ensuring that healthcare professionals choose to live in these more marginalized areas. And I would like to conclude by mentioning Sweden once again. As I was telling my colleague Cecilia, 30 years ago, I started studying health policies and I saw Sweden as a guide, as a lighthouse. It is one of the role models in Europe. And Sweden, what Sweden did, it really invested in proximity systems and in disinvolvement. And so decentralization and territorial empowerment are key concepts. And we have to focus a lot more in those policies to ensure that that physicians don't just go to huge centers because there's a good employment system there. No, but we have to create incentives that ensure that they are attracted to the more rural areas. So, my dear colleague, this is a really hot potato in all of Europe. Not only in the smaller countries, but also in more developed countries such as France. Thank you very much. This was one of the matters that we have debated during one of our meetings, because I myself come from the hinterland of Portugal. And so when the professor was the Minister of Health, this was one of the reasons why we always met, i.e. the challenge of bringing physicians and doctors to these areas and what type of incentives we could create, besides a mere financial incentive, for them to move there. Maybe it could be a boost to their career or show them the importance of these communities. And I would like to pass the floor to the Member of Parliament, Cecilia Wydry, to comment on this specific matter that was raised by the French Member of Parliament, and then to our dear panelists, Francisco Jorge. Ms. Cecilia, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and let me start by saying I thought all the doctors wanted to be doctors in France or Portugal when they leave Sweden. Sorry not. No, it's a global or a European problem for all. And to start with, of course, is the basis of education and attraction to the job is, of course, essential in this area as it is to any lack of labour. But, for instance, we have started to find a way to have doctors being doctors, not making the bureaucracy or administration or anything around it. Let them have a more patient time, and, of course, the access will be better by that. But also having the discussion between the doctors and those specific areas and the nurses, and let the nurses grow in the roles and even do more job than they have done before. You have to divide it more up, and you have to take those tough discussions with the unions, especially the doctor unions of that. The second of all we have done is to try to find attraction in our rural country. As you know, if you tip Sweden around geographically, you will come to the southest part of Italy. That's how long our country is, and we need to have doctors far up in the North Pole, close to say, not really, but far up with Norway, far away, far up. If you take the airplane, it's a three-hour ride in Sweden. And to have doctors up there, we use a lot of this Skype, telemedicine, and you can actually make very small parts of operations with the telecom system. And by doing that, you raise the attraction of the rural areas, so they actually want to stay on other places because they have the connection to the university hospitals or to the closest hospital, and they can go there and interact with their colleagues sometimes. So that kind of attraction. And the third part is what I mentioned before. We have had a discussion, and now there are so many more of the healthcare people that we are putting cars and they drive out and see the patients in their homes. And by doing that, we have even had more patient time. So we try to use the specialists that we have even better. It's kind of the conclusion of those three points. Thank you.
Thank you very much. E agora também quero comentar. Não?
Would you like to comment as well? No? Okay, perfect. Then I would like to ask our next speaker, the one who is joining us from remotely, Miss Emilia Aragon, if you would like to contribute to this last matter which was raised.
Thank you. Yes, I guess it's a very short message. It's more about these changing the way that we are thinking about development as well. So, of course, a lot of people are moving towards cities, but it's also important to go back to our values and principles as well and think about development and what is what people need to appreciate, who not just only motivate people from moving to cities back into rural areas, but also to making that something attractive, to see that working in the fields is something that is very well appreciated, that has a huge importance for the communities, and that there's a lot of potential of growing and thriving in those areas. So it's a whole change about economic development, social and environmental development. So that's a short message. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. E agora íamos prosseguir. Tenho mais.
Now we have other members who would like to take the floor. So I would like to give the floor to the president of the 12 Plus group, Duarte Pacheco. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to welcome and thank all of the panelists and the very interesting food for thought I've brought to the table. I would just like to highlight two or three matters to complicate, if you will, our debate. Now, let me start. When looking at the link between health and quality of life, on a global scale, we have very big differences and gaps because we have specific regions around the globe where basic investments in infrastructure, sanitation, drinking water, access to education is not made, and all of these are at the heart of a better and healthier life. However, this is not the major problem, unfortunately, in our geopolitical group. And therefore, we are working on another stage, on another level. But within this level, we have localized some of these basic problems. But what we really focus on in this level, the relation between the sustainability of the system. We have a specific health system in one way or another, tries to guarantee universal coverage for the population. And I'm talking of developed countries and European countries, but more and more we are seeing that the costs of these systems are becoming untenable. They're becoming too costly. What does this mean? As parliamentarians and policymakers, and I'm sure that Alberto Campos Fernandes saw this when he was a minister, we had to see how to share resources and distribute resources which are becoming scarcer and scarcer, to face the demands of an older population by implementing technology which is becoming more and more expensive, and medicines and drugs, which are becoming more and more expensive. Therefore, the sustainability of the system is something which is being questioned right now, because, of course, we never want to take a step back. We want to make two steps forward. So nobody wants to question what we have already reached and achieved. But we really should think about the sustainability of the system that we have. And then just another two comments. The increase of the quality of our lifespan, but then we have to ask us the following question. What is the quality of this extended life? If we live up until the age of 100, but the quality isn't that good, well, what's our sense of it? Now, in Portugal, we have solitude for the elderly. That is a great problem here in Portugal. It is not a, well, health issue, if you will, but it is a real problem which also flows into the national health system. We see that many elderly go to the national health system and they look for affection. They look for someone who can exchange words with someone, words that they can't exchange in their daily life. And how can we tackle this problem? And ultimately, now, of course, machines aren't at the heart of this. We need workforce. And as the professor already said, that the lack of doctors is a great problem. But I would also say that this lack of resource and the lack of an active workforce and the aging population, well, this also has an impact on all of the human resources. So what we have to do by this course, well, we might have to open the borders to other populations who want to work and live here to tackle this situation. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Of course, sustainability and the system sustainability is a huge challenge. We do recognize that. And, of course, that's why we have spoken also about the budget burden. And so we really do share this preoccupation about the system sustainability, that it's all good to try and meet the healthcare objectives, but there are specific challenges, not only when assessing the solitude of the elderly and human resources. I would like to hand the floor by Mr. Francisco Jorge. You will be the first. The floor is yours. Thank you very much. Well, yes, you are completely right. These are problems that we have to try and face, especially at a political level. Because after all, politicians determine policies. And so, there has to be some accountability. The centres of decision-making. And they have to focus on solutions for these matters and solitude when linked to the elderly citizens, represents a huge preoccupation and it needs a social answer. And I would like to remind you all in this location that the age group above 85 years of age has a 40% likelihood of suffering from dementia, such as Alzheimer. What does that mean? So when you reach an age of 85 years or more, the likelihood of each and every one of these people of suffering from dementia is 40%. So once you reach the age of 85, that's what could happen. And we have to recognize that there are many people who are elderly, who have dementia, which is not treated as such. So age is an issue, but also the fact that they go living with dementia, which isn't treated as a problem. And so there are matters which concern epidemiologists and members of parliament has to analyze these in detail to ensure that they implement the right decisions, the necessary ones. Thank you very much. Well, then I would like to hand the floor to Adalberto Campos Fernandes. The floor is yours. Thank you very much, President Duarte Pacheco. Well, I'm not sure if I can say that, but you are really adding insult to injury, really, here. Kind of, it's a sore point. It's a sore point. I do remember that a couple of months ago, when it came to the Portuguese government, a specific body talked about the alarm bell when it came to demography and just transition. There are specific countries, some more than others. They are not really investing in the demographic changes and the aging and how aging can have an impact not only on the economic perspective but also on the human one. From here to 30 years down the line, we will have a complete different structure of the social level. When it came to Portugal and we slashed the price of transport passes, and what did this lead to? The elderly are the top users during the weekend. During one session with the head of the public transport system, said that trains, so we're talking of heavy vehicles, when it came to the frequency of travelers, well, we saw that the lion's share but represented by elderly. If I were to go in a train, if I were to go from the start to the end of the train, well, then we'll not only be elderly. People who look at this just goes on to say, it has very serious matters on mobility. It has implications on physical activity, but it has greater impacts on relations of people and how they create relationships, because these new relationships aren't created among members of their own family, but members of the same age group. Now, of course, our colleague from the WHO cabinet talked about this before. We simply cannot talk about the alterations to the burden of disease of the epidemiological transition. In the last 10 years here in Portugal, we have huge burdens. As Professor Francisco Jorge said, cancer is a chronic disease nowadays, and so we have to really understand how the European society will look like in 15, 20, 30 years when it comes from the human aspect, but also from an economic and financial perspective. And to conclude, maybe it is the time has come for countries, and that includes Portugal, that we need health policies and social policies. I do not believe that we have more time to ensure that there are two parallel political schools of thought, because health is social support and social support is health. And so when drafting the health system, we cannot simply focus on the fact that patients are only those who have a physical debilitation or disease. Well, no, that is a great fallacy, because we have to focus on a multi-sectoral approach when it comes to drafting the policies. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if Ms. Emilia Aragon...
this issue, please. Emilia Aragon.
I thank you so much for highlighting that, the intersectoral challenge, because that's exactly what we're trying to promote here in the next, since the adoption in 2012 of the Health 2020. And this is, with the SDGs, what we're trying to do as well is to highlight how plans need to be coherent from when countries decide how, what are their sustainable development priorities. And this is not just for developing countries, but also developed countries such as the countries in Europe. So highlight what are the priorities in at the national level of for economic, social, and environmental development, and how this translate as well for the health sector. What are the same priorities? How do we contextualize those priorities for the health sector as well and ensure that when we are making policies in the health sector, we include actions to be taken in transport sector, agricultural sector, commercial sector, finance sector, parliamentarians, and also ensure that the regulations are in place for the private sector to contribute to the priorities as well of the country at the national level. So the multi-sectoral action is extremely fundamental to keep on making progress on health policies and take an integrated approach to health and well-being.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And now the floor for Slovenia. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Yesterday was very well organized and educated. Thank you for the yesterday. It was inspiring that scientists and doctors are searching for and discovering medicines at any moment. Thank you to them. Surely people's health is in the first place. Countries should also change values and value system. A great challenge for society will also ensure better human health throughout life, as chronic diseases are more common with the aging of the population. Reducing health inequalities is one of the key challenges in creating the conditions for a good quality of life. The permanent task must be to raise awareness and educate residents about the importance of the health lifestyle and the necessary change in consumer patterns that affect the quality of life for all generations and the reduction of environment pressure. Every day I wonder that are the solution of countries. I know that euthanasia should not be solution. We must help people elevate pain and build on the care of the elderly and the sick to the product them. I want a safe and decent age, really. Decent age. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if I... Sorry, give me the sign who wants to take the floor, please, in this moment. Okay. And I see yes, now you can have the floor, Hungary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's W voice. Okay, I am really convinced that there is no chance for a good quality of life without good health and social welfare. These are very important indicators as well, showing if we are or we are not on the right path towards sustainability. All our efforts without a physically and mentally healthy society seems a weak exercise. Health is a fundamental human right. Poor health threatens the rights of children to education, limits economic opportunities for men and women, and increases poverty within communities and countries around the world. From one hand, we can say that technological development and innovation has a great role, for example, to successfully overcome several illnesses which were incurable in the past. On the other hand, due to our consumption and production patterns in the last centuries and decades, we have to face new civilizational illnesses spreading to more and more parts of the world. There are positive signs as well, namely that there is some progress in the developing countries in providing healthy drinking water, food, housing, sanitation. However, we still have a large debt related to this field. Environmental pollution, let it be air, water, or soil pollution, even if the emission is caused by others, decreases the chance for living a healthy life in this region as well. Therefore, our country's ecological footprint and transboundary emissions should be drastically decreased. And there is a serious common task related to the increasing proportion of lands or oceans, rivers, which need overall remediation due to their former pollution. The next challenge is to appropriately manage health risks caused by different materials like asbestos or other chemicals, for example, glyphosate or neonicotinoid. Last but not least, we have to face the common risk due to the climate change, the spread of different human, plant, or animal diseases, floods and droughts, with all their consequences on health and well-being. We all know that any progress in these fields needs coordinated activities, including education and information dissemination, research and development, and providing the necessary legal, institutional, and financial conditions. Our general ambition should be that living longer than our predecessors is not enough. We have to live our lifetime in health. There are several good and bad practices proving that the question is not to have higher standard of living, more money, or to protect nature and environment. We should find a win-win solution enhancing sustainability. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. And e agora vou dar a palavra, penso que já não temos.
Now, as nobody else would like to take the floor for the debate, I would like to hand the floor to our guests, our panelists, that is, to maybe give us some concluding thoughts. Based on the last two matters which were raised by the members of Parliament, who I would like to thank once again for their intervention, i.e. Slovenia. So thank you, Slovenia and Hungary, for your two interventions and having participated in the debate. So I would like to hand the floor for starters. Yes, the person sitting on my right, so Adalberto Franziskamp. And then we will, I will hand the floor to the other panelists. Thank you very much. Well, I would just like to thank you once again for having invited me here today, and thank all of the members of Parliament. And I can tell you that the representatives of Parliament know exactly that we're living in a world made of inequalities, a world that can improve when it comes to human development if countries consider that social policies, namely health and social security policies, are a tool which will reduce, which will close inequalities. We all know that the world will be more peaceful, will be more united, will be more just if democracy is channeled thanks to social and public and health policies that promote human dignity, respect for our neighbours and for the people, and more than anything else, that we, thankfully, will live more and more years. And so that means that our last days on this earth cannot be lived in squalor or in stress. And to the member of Slovenia, and I agree with you, it is not euthanasia that will reduce or solve the problem of human dignity. Thank you very much. So I would like to hand the floor to Professor Francisco Jorge. The floor is yours. Thank you very much. Now, don't take this personally. But the debate that took place today is the start of a process, if you will. And a process that has to be managed seriously, intensely, from this moment, across all of the Parliament, especially when it comes to the countries that are represented here today. This debate is not the solution to all of our problems, of course. That means that we are still concerned, we are still preoccupied, as we have seen. And so, to really bring this initiative to a close, what we have to do is continue with this reflection in our respective parliaments and make measures to correct situations. And today is the 75th anniversary that D-Day occurred in Normandy. And this event triggered a peace process, and a peace process that involved all of Europe. And so we have to continue living in peace. But at the same time, what is really necessary is for us to continue improving the life and the conditions of the European citizens. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much. And now I would like to hand the floor to Cecilia for her closing remarks. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And see this as a wake-up call when you see the SDG goals and the indicators and see where we're going. We have a game to play. Portugal played good yesterday, as we heard. No Swiss in the room, we can say that, huh? But this is a wake-up call for the coming games. And for us in the room here, we can make the change. We have the leadership. It's no one else. It's no one outside the room. It's actually we sitting here, and we have to take that. We live in a very interesting time. And those years ahead of us, we can use very, very good. We have looked at the opportunities today. There are lots of opportunities. Research and development today make progress so much faster. Innovation and the entrepreneurial spirit makes changes and make a change in people's personal lives. What a few years ago couldn't be dealt with can today be dealt with, and tomorrow we will go even faster. But we have to take that leadership and make that changes. We have a lot of challenges, of course, in this interesting time. Aging is one of the issues that have broadly been discussed here today. Antibiotics is another one. There are a lot of challenges, but the leadership is in the room, and we have to take it from here. And we all go back to our national parliaments and take that leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Muito obrigada. Realmente, as lideranças são fundamentais.
Thank you very much. This is true. Leadership is really important, and we can really not step back from our responsibility. We really have to take charge of our responsibility. Now, to bring this session to a close, I would like to hand the floor to Emilia Aragon. I would also like to thank her for being here with us, if you will, during the entirety of the morning and having participated during this conference. So thank you very much for participating. The floor is yours.
Thank you, actually, for the invitation. And I'd just like to highlight as well the need of sharing these experiences. Countries learn from countries, peers learn from peers. And although we do have the research and a lot of research and development and knowledge, how we share it, it's very important. So we need to improve that. And I'd like to invite all of you, not only to go back to your parliaments and discuss and debate about the issues we discussed today, but also to share your examples. And I'd like to give you that space as well from the regional office. We're trying to collect examples to inspire countries, regions, cities, little communities as well, on what they can do. So if you are more than welcome, if you wish to share with me examples of how you are improving the living conditions of your citizens, what is working for you, what doesn't work, which hard mechanisms you're using, any financial mechanisms that you use to bring the work forward and to ensure implementation of the plans. So thank you so much for this opportunity, and I look forward for more collaboration with your group.
Thank you very much. Portanto, agradecendo a todos.
Thank you, everyone, members of parliament, guests. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you for being here, and I would like to highlight that the IPU president and the president of the 12-plus geopolitical group have motivated us in our role as parliamentarians and member of parliaments and politicians to promote sessions of this nature and to go back home and assess in our countries the state of each and every SDG to try and meet the objectives as outlined in the main charter. I would also like to remind you that we went to Israel on a similar initiative, and it was a really interesting initiative when we spoke about technology and innovation. Well, all of these objectives have one thing in common. There is a willingness and a willingness to improve the life of people, of our populations. And this is the core objective of policies and the core objective carried by politicians. We want to serve the citizens and draft realistic policies and really serve the needs of actual populations, not just kind of populations without knowing who we are talking to. No, we really have to be active on the ground and know the real needs and demands of specific individuals and know in which way to serve them. Of course, we have to also consider the divergences of the different stakeholders, so we have to deal with these issues and their interests. But we really have to appeal that the mission of any type of work that we carry out here in these hallowed halls is to be beneficial to one another and to serve our citizens and find a way of promoting the common good and improving the life of our populations. Therefore, I would like to thank you once again. I would like to declare this debate closed. It was really an honor to be able here to moderate the table of this panel. We have a coffee break right now, and then after the coffee break, we will have a family photo to close the session. And as was already mentioned, it is a challenge. It is an alarm bell, a siren call, which represents food for thought that will help us carry out our work in our respective parliaments. Thank you very much.